Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. I'm your host, Ron Edwards, coming to you from Minneapolis and St. Paul, the Twin Cities. Our co-host, Don Allen, is kind of on assignment doing his political thing, and so we'll be carrying the entire program up to 4 o'clock. Beautiful day here in the Twin Cities. Temperature doesn't reflect it, though, but at least the sun's out, if you will, and there's no snowfall. This has been a long winter here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. You can see it starting to get on people's nerves, if you will. Hey, just as an aside, big gathering down at J.D. Hoyt's last night, black, quote-unquote, Democrats. Movers and shakers, the only thing they were moving and shaking last night at J.D. Hoyt's was that liquor. They do drink a lot. I wonder how many of them got DWIs last night. But anyways, and they were shaking behind some of the ladies that were there. And some of those guys are married. Well, but what the heck? You know, what the wife doesn't know, I guess, you know, won't hurt her, quote unquote. But on a more serious note, you know, this is called March Madness. It's a sports metaphor, if you will, talks in terms of basketball at the division levels in the NCAA, the NIA, and et cetera. Women, both women and men. And so they talk about, you know, March Madness. And so we're going to talk about basketball quite a bit on this program, but we have a more important priority this afternoon, and that is the winds or the dogs of war. And as we've said on our television program here in the Twin Cities, as well as our blog and newspaper column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, for the last 4 years or better, that one needed to keep an eye on North Korea. Significant troop movements going on in that particular region and part of the world, on that peninsula, the Korean Peninsula, if you will. North Korean mechanized units, particularly artillery units, on the move. Many who think they are experts on North Korea maintain that the North Koreans are just boasting and talking a lot of quote-unquote yang-yang, if you will, bellicose and et cetera. We don't concur. As one who has studied the North Korean mindset, and particularly its ongoing conflict and serious animus against the United States and the West, as well as some in the local neighborhood, specifically the Japanese, one should not underestimate the propensity by the North Koreans to do what they feel they need to do. For some time under the previous North Korean leaders, the father and grandfather of the current supreme leader of North Korea, North Koreans feel that they have been picked on and have never been forgiven, really, for in concert with their Chinese allies in the period of 1950 to 1953, actually battling the United States and the UN as those forces were identified in those days to a standstill, really, which brought about a truce. And, in fact, as we all know, if you are historians and studiers of the conflict on that peninsula, a state of war has continued for 60 years between the North and the South. There seems to be periods of time when things are getting better, and then it spikes back to the negative. United States and Western nations went to great lengths 15 years ago to stop the North Koreans from obtaining nuclear capability. The North Koreans, which allegedly is a nation that is starving to death, I mean, that's what we are told here in the United States, to justify America's policy under any group of presidents in the last 30 years. The fact of the matter is the North Koreans, just as, you know, we do here in the United States, commit a tremendous amount of budget, resource, revenue, and et cetera to military preparation, military safeguards, if you will, military research, and et cetera. And we do not speak lightly on this program when we talk in terms of the possibility of a misstep in North Korea could set us on a very, very dangerous course. I don't know that people really have thought through the economic piece of this potential conflict. If North Korea, which has the capabilities of basically overrunning most of South Korea before the United States and its allies could even begin to respond. And then that response, by the way, will bring China into the equation, and you will have two very significant nuclear powers facing off. And then the Russians will have to make a decision on what they will do and how they will handle the situation in their neighborhood, if you will. We have the possibility, even in a conventional battle, let's say that nuclear weapons aren't brought into play, but clearly the North Koreans will not, quote-unquote, allow themselves to be pushed into a position of defeat. And unless the Chinese are able to really be persuasive with the North Korean military and the North Korean Politburo and leadership, we very well then could have a nuclear backlash, which will take a lot of the drama out of the Middle East for that particular moment. How long a confrontation like that will go on? A conventional confrontation could last for an extended period of time, certainly in excess of a year. Casualties would be enormous, if you will. North Koreans, according to intelligence reports, have at least 80,000 artillery pieces pointed at Seoul, the capital and the economic heartland of South Korea, and the North Koreans feel no obligation to spare Seoul if a decision is made that war must, quote-unquote, take place. Certainly the North Koreans will initiate strikes against Japan and against Japan's industrial centers, the heart of Japan, industrial complexes, if you will, which will certainly create significant and severe problems within the Japanese economy. The possibility of North Korean missiles being able to reach as far as Guam and Okinawa and etc. is a reality. And so we should not, as Americans, take lightly this afternoon the possibility of war on the peninsula. And we should not take lightly the fact that basically America's 38,000 force there in South Korea would basically not be overrun within just a matter of almost hours. By the time America positions her surface ships and et cetera, at least half of South Korea, if not more, would be under North control, and then the battle would be commensurate with the fight in the 1950s on that peninsula when American and what was left of the South Korean army battled back and forth across that peninsula, and then the Chinese ended the conflict, and ultimately you had a stalemate, if you will. You know, General Douglas MacArthur wanted to nuke the Chinese, which would have been a tremendous mistake on the part of the United States. President Harry Truman vetoed that request, and ultimately it cost General MacArthur his career, really, as a five-star general. People tend to forget that. Of course, General MacArthur thought he was an expert on the little yellow people of the Far East. I'm not sure that he was. But clearly, the decision to use nuclear weapons against the peninsula and against the Chinese did not happen. And things continued to go in the way that they went. Of course, one of the great deterrents in 1953 was Russia, who had already perfected her nuclear capabilities, her nuclear force, and was prepared, quote-unquote, to engage the world in World War III, if you will. And so I'm watched closely as a journalist, as a historian, over the last 10 days, as so-called experts have attempted to dismiss, as they did with Dennis Rodman, who has actually been the only American who really has had a chance to sit down with the Supreme Leader. They dissed Dennis Rodman, dismissed him as a clown, if you will, just some bumble-dumble athlete, etc., which always can be fatal when one talks about the international scene, the international agenda, and being able to read correctly a situation which could have significant catastrophic consequences if the wrong decision is made, the wrong button is pushed, the right telephone call is not made, the right door to back channel discussions is not open. We could see hundreds of thousands of human beings lose their life, maybe even millions if nuclear conflict comes into play. So for those of you that are out there that stay on top of the international scene, if you will, as Franklin Graham, one of the sons of Billy Graham, said on CNN yesterday, let us offer a prayer for President Barack Obama and all others, be they in North Korea, China, Russia, South Korea, Japan, or whatever, who quote-unquote feel like they have a stake, that intelligent and resourceful, really, because you have to be resourceful to be diplomatic. You've got to know the lay of the land, and let us hope that the men and women, because South Korea just elected its first female president, if you will, I think she is being pushed to sound tough. The North Koreans are masters at sounding tough, and oftentimes they back that up with deeds, if you will, such as the sinking of a South Korean destroyer a little over a year ago. Their success with their nuclear and missile programs, which, again, American experts, some of whom have not been inside of North Korea. See, we don't feel bad as a commentator because certainly we haven't been inside of North Korea, but when I look at all these experts that I see on Fox and CNN and CNBC and MCCBC and BBC and et cetera, they haven't been there either. It is the hermit kingdom, if you will. And so one specifically needs to pray for the service personnel of both the South Korean and the United States and the North Korean armed forces that, in this case, though, you have a very young supreme leader in North Korea. Normally we say that we pray for young men who are sent into battle to die for, quote-unquote, the ambitions and the dreams of old men and old women, if you will. But in this case, you have a very young leader. Of course, obviously, he's being mentored by those who were, in fact, cultivated and crafted by his father and his grandfather before that. But he is still, in the eyes of the North Korean people, the supreme leader. He is the man that will have a lot to say about pushing the big button if that decision is made. We repeat again. News reports and intel out of North Korea maintain significant movement by North Korean military forces, particularly their missile forces, as they identify them, towards the South Korean border. And clearly, if the North Koreans decide to initiate a conventional conflict and force the United States to use nuclear, what they call nuclear tactical weapons, if you will, low-yield nuclear warheads, and et cetera, the United States and her allies become the bad guys. But what the North Koreans are clearly doing is demanding the lifting of sanctions and embargoes and et cetera, but more importantly, they're demanding that they be respected as a sovereign nation. Same kind of reflections and discussions that have been coming out since 1948 from the Palestinians, as an example, who still wait on a separate state. As we said on our television programs over the last couple of Sundays here in the Twin Cities, we think that President Barack Obama did not do a very effective job of conveying to the Palestinians that they are important as it pertains to the issue of homeland in the Middle East, if you will. By the way, conflict on the Korean Peninsula will take away the quote-unquote surveillance of Iran, and also it will increase and enhance the commitment by the North Koreans to provide maximum technical assistance and ability to the Iranians to begin to create their military tactical nuclear weapons. And so these are dangerous times, which demand, as we said before, great thinking, great depth and understanding of what the circumstances are, what needs to be done, and what should not be done in order to protect the safety of the planet, if you will. And so we look closely. We say again, we reinforce this again. Let us pray for the leaders to make sure that no one becomes historically the person that pushed the button for a third nuclear conflict and attack, the first two, of course, being the United States on Japan in 1945. Allegedly, we have not been involved in any kind of nuclear conflict since, if you will. But certainly this situation in North Korea, and we oftentimes in the United States do a very poor job of really analyzing and understanding and properly and respectfully understanding and analyzing the thinking of other people that don't look like white Christians, if you will, if you know what I'm saying. So we keep an eye on that. Well, the sports scene, March Madness, as we said earlier. By the way, phone numbers for today's program, 763-228-1748. 763-228-1748. Again, I'm co-host Ron Edwards. Don Allen is not with us today, though he may call in briefly. But we are at the helm, if you will. And we've just finished talking about, over the last almost 14 minutes, the potential for a serious miscalculation, misstep, as it pertains to the Korean Peninsula. Well, here in the Twin Cities, other than, you know, black Democratic leadership partying and getting drunk down at J.D. Hoyt's last night and here in Minneapolis, downtown Minneapolis, there has been a lot of discussion about the firing of a very revered and respected sports figure, Coach Tubby Smith, if you will. One of the things, as a journalist and longtime activist and historian, et cetera, in this city, I am really disappointed but not necessarily surprised at the silence of so-called leadership in our community in regards to what happened to Tubby. I mean, when you talk about real, you know, kind of, I have to use this word, chicken shitness, if you will, as it pertains to the athletic director, Norwood Traig, and his team of horsemen of the apocalypse, if you will. The way that they treated Tubby was outrageous. But our position here is that we should not be surprised, because that's a reflection of the disregard and the disrespect for African Americans, for black human beings. You know, one of the things that they did here, and again, Tubby had gone to the second round of the NCAA. Now, this time last year, sports writers here, we call them the Joseph Goebbels Brigade, that write for our two major white newspapers here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis Star Tribune and the St. Paul Dispatch. We call them members of the Joseph Goebbels. For those of you that maybe don't know, Joseph Goebbels was the propaganda chief. And he, until he died, poisoned himself, if I'm not respecting, if I remember correctly. Joseph Goebbels died in that bunker in Berlin as Russian troops pressed forward. But Joseph Goebbels was a shrewd, slick Nazi, if you will, and did a beautiful job, really, for the Nazi war machine for many years as their chief propagandist, if you will. He was legendary with respect to putting out, you know, the kind of message that made the Nazi regime and all the things that they were doing look right, if you will. Well, here in the Twin Cities, we have a similar cadre, if you will, of white reporters for the papers. Though I have to say, in all fairness and transparency, that Sid Hartman, who is the most senior of journalists here in the Twin Cities, really has taken exception to how Tubby Smith was dealt with, how he was fired, how he was disrespected, and et cetera. And so one has to give kudos to Sid Hartman, the sports writer, you know, emeritus, if you will, of the so-called crew. But people like Mark Rosen over at WCCO, Patrick Royce, Sansevier, Burrito and people like that really began to work this even before Norwood Trey came to the Twin Cities and took up his position last summer at the University of Minnesota. Of course, one of the first things he did was signed off on really what was a secret contract extension to the white female basketball coach for the University of Minnesota women's Gopher program, which hasn't seen the NCAA since 2005, if I'm not mistaken, when Lindsey Whalen, who is now a member of the Minnesota Lynx, was on that team. But one of the things that had began to take place over a year ago was the attacks on Tubby, even though Tubby had the previous year courageously, while still coaching, fought cancer and is a cancer survivor. See, nobody talks about that here in Minnesota, that two years ago that Tubby made a commitment. And certainly his lovely wife was not happy with that, but she knew how committed Tubby was to the program, but specifically his young men and et cetera. But Tubby, in his 6 years here, five of those years, he won 20 games or more. The 1 year that he didn't, he was, I think, 17-14. Tubby's always been a winner wherever he's gone. He's always also ran a very clean program because here at the University of Minnesota, particularly coming out of the 1980s, Minnesota became legendary, and in the 1990s also, under Clem Haskins, unfortunately, but Minnesota became legendary as a place in which the bending of the rules were the order of the day. And so I well remember 6 years ago that when Tubby Smith was hired, and people were just euphoric here in Minnesota to get a top-notch coach, particularly after Dan Munson, who Dan was a good coach, just he was a notch above his pay grade, if you will. First of all, he should have stayed at Gonzaga. But he's been doing pretty fair out at, if I'm mistaken, it's Long Beach State. And so one, you know, has to be happy for Dan Munson. Other than that, the rest of the folks that showed up were disasters. And so when this institution, this University of Minnesota, was able to bring Tubby Smith here as its basketball coach, there were these immediate high expectations, though Dan Munson hadn't done a very good job of putting the pillars in place that would have allowed for a program that would be successful in a couple of years. So it took Tubby about 4 years because he had to deal with the recruits that had already come aboard that were to be sophomores and juniors and seniors, because you have to be careful about jettisoning a athlete, particularly one that's on scholarship. NCAA and lawyers don't like that, if you will, and you know, you get sued, you get criticized, you get a bad name. And so Tubby had to work through that, get his own recruitment class in here, dealt with the normal problems that any coach deals with respect to discipline, disgruntled, unhappy players who maybe aren't getting enough playing time on the court, if you will, don't like the way things are going. And players are real funny about their minutes. I mean, you know, every player thinks that they should get the full, you know, 40 minutes or thereabouts on the court, if you will. And so Tubby had to handle all that, and to some degree it probably brought about his health problem. But he fought through that. He fought through his cancer. And the last two seasons, though he didn't make the NCAA last year, but he was runner-up in the NIT. All that interests the university is that you bring in revenue. You know, that's really what it's all about. I mean, think about it. I mean, coaches getting anywhere from $500,000 to $4 or $5 million to exploit young men. And this is all coaches. I mean, they understand that, who are basically receiving nothing but a lead scholarship. And in the case of black athletes, 60% or better of them don't graduate. They never get their degrees. And so whatever it is that they were able to learn, they're really not able to officially apply it, if you will. But, hey, that's a discussion for another time, if you will. In fact, when John Thompson and of Georgetown and Cheney of Temple raised that question over a decade ago right here in a conference, NCAA conference here in the Twin Cities, white commentators and sports writers dismissed Coach Thompson and Coach Cheney as being troublemakers, if you will, you know. And they were joined by other coaches, that particularly African-Americans. And, of course, the retaliation basically is that you don't become an attractive, quote-unquote, applicant for some of the better, quote-unquote, positions and jobs. But when Tubby came here at the University of Minnesota, it was not like University at least had not had one African-American coach in its history, and that was the legendary Clem Haskins, who did a heck of a job here. You know, he had some pretty good teams, and but he had to do what he had to do to meet the competition. One of the features that has emerged with respect to the firing of Tubby Smith is that there are now, and maybe somebody will be hired. Northwestern just hired somebody last night. But Tubby was the one and only African-American coach in this Big Ten / Big 12, if you will. And that is interesting, though that issue has been talked about before also, that all of these black athletes who are used to augment the profit for the institution, particularly in the profit sports, and primarily that's football and basketball, though here at the university and some northern tier colleges, hockey does produce some fairly decent revenue that basically carries everything else, if you will. By the way, congratulations to the University of Minnesota's women's hockey team, national champion, second year in a row, and a 41-0 season, if you will. That's just phenomenal. Probably will never be matched again in the history of the game of women's hockey, if you will. But back to Tubby Smith, a man of principle, if you will, a man who came and blended in with community, by the way. And that's important that we make that statement, because that community, particularly its leaders who were always there glad-handing, asking for a handout, begging for tickets, and et cetera, have been absolutely silent on what happened to Tubby and how it happened. Now, let us go back again as we diverted for just a couple moments from the actual scenario. About 2 years ago, the reporter covering the Gophers, as well as the Joseph Goebbels press corps here, began to raise questions about the lack of success of Tubby, that Tubby hadn't, quote-unquote, gotten us back to the NCAA. He hadn't gotten us into the Elite Eight, the Sweet 16, the Final Four, and all those kinds of things. And that was kind of peculiar because, as we said before, at that time, Tubby was in his fourth season. His first three seasons, he had won 20 games. They said he was 17-14 in that fourth season. And then he went back and again was able to get that 20th victory. As we said, runner-up in the NIT in a heck of a game last year. And, of course, this year going to the second round of the NCAA and before losing to a powerful and much better budgeted team, Florida, the Florida Gators, if you will, who also won last night, knocking off the Cinderella team, 16th seed Florida Gulf Coast, if you will, down there out of Fort Myers, Florida. So, you know, hey, congratulations to the school by the ocean, if you will. Beautiful campus there. But I don't know many coaches that are fired after getting their team into the second round of the NCAA, you know what I'm saying? But it happened. But also it allowed for the Big Ten, Big 12 to become even more lily white as it pertains to those who are the bosses, if you will, the coaches, if you will, depending on the institution. If you're at Indiana, as an example, the thinking there is that, you know, the colored guys, the colored athletes, quote-unquote, are here to entertain us and jump up and down and boogie and et cetera. Some programs have a little better respect for the African-American athlete. I would say Michigan State is one. Michigan is kind of up and down. Ohio State, you know. Indiana probably may be one of the worst, if you will. Wisconsin has a quota system, if you will. Iowa somewhat has a quota system. Nebraska is new. Penn State, up and down, really has not been a real power as it pertains to our basketball. And, of course, now they're trying to, you know, reshape themselves, remarket themselves after the sex scandals there in central Pennsylvania. But Tubby brought a respect and a heritage, if you will, that he had started with at places like Tulsa and Georgia and Kentucky, where he had a nice run, if you will, but never could do enough for the Kentucky faithful after he won that national championship in almost his first year, if you will. And so when he came here, there was high expectations. And we just think in this corner that Tubby did an excellent job. Key was he kept the program clean. He did what he needed to do to protect the integrity of the program, the integrity of his players, and most importantly, I mean, the integrity of the institution. And so it was hard to figure why Norwood Traig, who had come here from Virginia Commonwealth, decided to treat Tubby Smith in such a disrespectful manner. And see, one of the things that they did, not only did they last summer, just after Norwood had arrived here and had given a secret extension to the white female coach at the University of Minnesota's women's program, he began to listen to the good old boys club here in Minnesota, who told him it was time for Tubby to move on. That, and they had a person in mind, and that person, I mean, we all know, those of us who are very much involved and follow the activities and the actions, know that it was Flip Saunders, former starter and star guard with the University of Minnesota back in the mid-1970s, a teammate of the legendary Ray Williams, who passed from this life earlier in the week, if you will, one of the greatest ball players to come into the University of Minnesota, played with the legendary Michael Thompson and Kevin McHale, now the coach at Houston. Flip, you know, home kind of homeboy kind of thing, always well-liked by the media, became a coach in the professional football, and in the Professional Basketball League and the NBA, if you will. His last stop was Washington, which didn't turn out so well. So Flip had kind of been out of work, not even working a lot as an analyst, if you will. But word started filtering out that Flip Saunders should be the man entrusted with the University of Minnesota head basketball job. But that meant they had to get rid of Tubby. Tubby was not losing. Of course, then you can manufacture all kinds of expressions of concern and analysis, negative analysis. And, of course, that's what started to happen. Now, this year, Tubby came out of the gate, as we all know, at 15-1. At one point, his team was ranked as high as 8th in the national rankings. But then the Big Ten play started. The Big Ten has been a graveyard, really, for each other. And it's been a very tough league. And if you lose one game at home, you're really in trouble because you're basically not going to win on the road. But, you know, Tubby is a perfectionist in many respects, and he tries to teach young men not only the skills and the philosophy of basketball, but the skills and the philosophy of life. And that was one of the things that caught my attention as a longtime observer of the Minnesota sports scene and the national and the world sports scene, if you will, a man who is a teacher in every respect of the discipline of teaching, if you will. And so it was, well, to me personally, it was not surprising. I've seen this happen before. I've seen this Joseph Goebbels press corps turn on African Americans, even those as beloved and as popular as the late Kirby Puckett, as an example. I've seen them turn on winners like Clem Haskins. I've seen them turn on people like Dwayne Casey, who was fired by the Timberwolves, though he was 20-20 at the beginning of that season a number of years ago. I saw Sidney Lowe, who was the coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves for a brief period of time. I have seen these white journalists in my cities lobby against an African-American being put in any position of authority and responsibility. In fact, one of the things that Norwood did, that the university and its new incoming president who came here from where, Stony Brook out in New York, is that there are no African-Americans of any specific rank or authority in the athletic department. We have basically an all-white athletic department, except for the clerical staff. And by the way, that's a common, because the Minnesota Timberwolves
administration and front office is all white, if you will, though David Kahn promised in a copyrighted story in October of last year that he was working on bringing in an African-American as a top executive in a franchise and a front office that hadn't had an African-American since the legendary Billy McKinney left here a decade ago. So our thinking here in Minnesota has always been that the black athlete is here to entertain, if you will. He's here to amuse, and he's here to make money, both for amateur and professional sports, if you will, because the university building a new football stadium is looking for a big payday. Contrary to what they were saying, part of the decline in attendance at the University of Minnesota basketball was the economy. And, you know, and by the way, if we lived in a region in which African Americans would receive at least a half a chance to be employed and receive the same kind of work as Caucasians do here, we would probably have that 2,000 slippage, 2,000 in attendance. We would probably be able to make that up with African Americans who would be able to afford the season tickets for the Minnesota Gopher basketball team, as well as the Minnesota Timberwolves. But in this state, we are legendary with regards to making sure that a black man is making at least four times less and has only 1 in 10 opportunities to be hired as opposed to a Caucasian, to a white person. I mean, that's just the way it works here. And so what has basically happened is the following, is that Flip Saunders was the man. And we're taking a look at what appears to be a call. Hold it just a minute. Hello. Yes. Go right ahead, sir. We have a comment.
This is Brother James.
Brother James, welcome. Thank you. Go right ahead, my brother.
It's a good thing we're on that topic. I'm pretty much liking what I'm hearing. You know, I've always liked it, Chubby, myself. But seeing how we're on this education thing, you know, we just got out of Black History Month here a while back, and I'd like you and Don on KFAI. I wish you guys could have stayed on a little longer. But there's a lot of talk going on with education, 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 and there's nobody ever mentioned the, I believe he's still living, the gentleman who gave Head Start, Get Start.
Okay, gotcha.
I believe he's still living. He's like 90 now.
Mm-hmm.
But he has a treasure trove of knowledge in his head. And we just really need to get these type of people. And he pretty much looks almost like he could be your twin brother now. I'm looking at a picture of him right now. That gentleman has a lot of education knowledge. Some of the people that's in the charter school business, and I don't really too much promote that, but Dr. Gordon has a lot of knowledge that he could share with the sister who has the daycare and a lot of these people that's running the daycares and the home daycares and the after-school programs. There's never a mention of Dr. Gordon. And I'm going to just let you go on that.
Thank you, Brother James. Appreciate your call, sir. Thank you. Appreciate that call. Call out of our Twin Cities, if you will, Brother James, one of our lesser known historians, but a man of tremendous knowledge and a wealth of information. The education piece is something that is important, and we go back to our earlier comments on Coach Tubby Smith, and that was that Tubby was almost a fanatic on the importance of education and graduating his athletes. And what Brother James points out is that that was not necessarily a priority goal with the University of Minnesota. Just bring them in here, have them entertain us, have them make revenue and profit for the institution, and if they get the diploma, fine. If they don't, that's unfortunate. Brother Gordon that he talked about, that Brother James talked about, one of the great educational minds of our modern times, if you will, a man who really recrafted the educational direction and mission of America, if you will, never given any credit, never any reflections with respect to his insight, his greatness, and et cetera. And so once again, appreciate a caller reminding us of these American heroes, if you will, who actually formulated and brought forward change in order to deal with, no matter what kind of phrase they try to coin, you know, educational gap, dysfunctional, or et cetera, what it is just a failing education system run by people who, by and large, don't look like us. When you talk in terms, particularly in the great institutions where educators are trained to matriculate and craft and deliver their skills. I've always said to people, and I learned this lesson a long time ago, that we are here to educate, not to train. If you train animals, you train monkeys, okay? You're here to educate. You're here to encourage people to absorb the information, the data, if you will, which gives them a sense of direction. You know, at the top of this program, as we spent just a number of minutes, 14 minutes, on the North Korean situation, that was a part of our subliminal, and that part being that we hope that we have skilled thinkers, if you will, people, men and women of significant intellect who understand the importance of not making a misstep right now and bringing us to the brink of a nuclear holocaust, or even if we have a conventional conflict on the Korean Peninsula, that millions will die as it pertains to that. And for this columnist, in this case, this commentator, our reflections were of Dr. Gordon and other great African-Americans who worked so hard to talk about the importance of education, if you will, the education of the African-American, the education of the Negro, however you want to depict it, if you will. Again, phone number 763-228-1748. 763-228-1748. Again, I'm co-host Ron Edwards. Don Allen is on a mission, if you will, an assignment. And so we've been dealing with today's program. Let us return now to the Tubby Smith situation. When Norwood Traig and his henchmen decided that it was time to move Tubby out, and they had bought in to the marketing and the solicitation of Flip Saunders as the next coach, there was a wrinkle thrown in for those of you that maybe have not paid any attention, and that is that Flip Saunders had been advising Glenn Taylor, the billionaire owner of the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Minnesota Lynx, if you will, a successful businessman in Mankato, Minnesota, which is a small city south of the Twin Cities, if you will. Glenn Taylor, a good man trying to do the right thing, but has suffered through some real disappointments in the last 8 or 9 years as his beloved Timberwolves have not been competitive in the NBA. And so, of course, when David Kahn and Rick Adelman brought to him this proposal last year that they needed to turn this team all white, unfortunately, Glenn Taylor kind of bought into it. And I'm that person who was quoted in Sports Illustrated as saying that this is not a good strategy and that it was going to backfire. And I also said in my own column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder that if Adelman and Kahn did not win between 45 and 50 games and get the Timberwolves into the playoffs, that they should be fired, starting with David Kahn. Well, it appears that Glenn Taylor was starting to give some credence to that observation by a black observer, if you will. And the word began to float that David Kahn, the so-called vice president and general manager of operations for the Minnesota Timberwolves, will be let out as soon as the last game is played. And because Glenn Taylor had been asking Flip Saunders to kind of evaluate things for him, advise him on basketball and et cetera, that he saw Flip Saunders as the person that should take over as vice president for basketball operations for the Minnesota Timberwolves, and if he chose to be general manager and coach, as Kevin McHale did for a couple of years before he was pushed out, that he could do that. But Flip is a pretty shrewd individual, and so, you know, his thinking was, you know, I'll take over as vice president of basketball operations. But in the meanwhile, Glenn Taylor had indicated that he wanted to sell a portion of the team. He wanted to bring in some new investors and et cetera for whatever his financial and tax reasons were. And he was giving Flip Saunders first shot at putting together an investors group to buy at least probably a third of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Glenn indicated he wanted to keep control. He didn't want to leave Minnesotans on the limb, as what happened in Seattle when the franchise was sold to an outside investment group, and the team, of course, was moved to Oklahoma City. And so the problem that emerged was that there were two sides now pulling over the last 30 days at Flip Saunders to become the head coach of the Minnesota Gophers, and that to, on the other hand, become vice president of basketball operations, either take the helm as coach or bring in someone that he was comfortable with. Now, money became an issue. Some of the sports core here, the Joseph Goebbels Brigade, have constantly over the last 10 days made it appear that Flip is well off and et cetera. Flip's not that well off, okay? That $3 or $4 or $5 million contract and salary would not augment and make he and his family extremely happy. Well, what has happened, and rumor has now circulated in the last 14 hours or so, that the university tried to get away with being cheap, and that Norwood Craig and his buddies, Ellis and Benedict, offered Flip a $500,000 contract. Flip said, "You got to be crazy. I need a whole lot more money than that." In fact, some are now saying in the last 12 hours or thereabouts that Flip has said he sees $3 million as the minimum that he can live with. Now, the university is already paying out a tremendous amount of dollars to a couple football coaches and even the former basketball coach Don Munson, as we understand it, and according to the records that ultimately have to be filed as a part of disclosure. And so at this particular hour, it appears that there is extreme difficulty with respect to convincing Flip Saunders to come into play. And so what has basically happened is that the university is up a tree, if you will, because Norwood Craig had assured the president and the chair of the region that they would be able to make this move, wipe Tubby Smith out, defame him, if you will, and get a new white head coach in here. They were looking at coaches at Memphis, Marquette, Butler, if you will. They threw the brother in, Grant, at Alabama just to pretend that they were still concerned about diversity. But really, it was Flip that they thought they could get, but apparently they thought they could get Flip penny cheap. Bad move, bad thinking. And so what's going to have to happen here in Minnesota is that the big donors, the big fat, you know, alumni are going to have to come up with the makeup. Now, a couple other things are at play. You know, Tubby was promised when he was hired here that one of the things he would have, because Tubby pointed out how unattractive the University of Minnesota's basketball facility is to these high-powered young recruits that you're asking to come here. It's bad enough that the campus is really an urban campus set right in the center of the city of Minneapolis, if you will, and that it doesn't necessarily have the attractiveness that you need. And so Tubby was promised a training facility, and that was supposed to have been developed and in place according to the promises of the former athletic director. Tubby never got that. They were never able to raise the money. The other thing that happened to Tubby that people don't talk about, Tubby is a man who's honest with himself and about himself. And one of the things that he said in his initial interview 6 years ago was that he was concerned that he was not the kind of recruiter that he liked to be. Hold on just a minute. Yes, caller. Go ahead. What's your question, sir? The question from the caller is, you say, what have the black leaders said? Oh, I'm sorry, sir. This is our friend out of Chattanooga. Okay, down there in Tennessee with the Volunteers, if you will. The black leaders here haven't said anything. There's been no press conferences. There's been no expression of support for Tubby. In fact, some say, well, you know, Tubby messed up, whatever that's supposed to mean. So that's what's happened here, sir. Now, there's been no expression of concern about how Tubby was treated, how he was fired, how that the information was leaked, that Norwood Tregg and his two prime assistants leaked the information that Tubby had been fired, allowed Tubby to swing in the wind for about 2 hours, and then went into his office and told him he was fired. I'm sorry, I've got to repeat that caller. Well, you know, we're pretty passive here. Caller indicated we seem to be a little passive here in Minnesota, and you're absolutely correct. All I can say is that the only, other than myself in my column and on my television show to air tomorrow here in the Twin Cities, hour-long program, which I commit the entire hour to Tubby and what happened to him, Charles Holman, lead writer for the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, I think we're the only two quote-unquote African-Americans that who have a platform or saying anything with respect to what happened to Tubby and how Tubby was disrespected. All right? All right. Thank you, sir. By the way, stay tuned down there in Chattanooga because I'm getting ready to tell a real negative piece that Norwood Tregg and his buddies put out on Tubby in order to justify his firing. Thank you, sir, for calling in. Caller out of Chattanooga, Tennessee, calls in quite a bit, knows the city. But let me tell you what we just said. One of the things that they did that was real foul, and people around the country need to know this. When the season started, Mike Ellis, one of the folks that Norwood brought here with him from Virginia Commonwealth, started showing up at the very first trip with Tubby's team. He was a part of the traveling entourage. Mike Ellis, his role was to watch Tubby. And initially people were trying to figure out, well, what was that all about? I mean, though Tubby's son had a DWI in the summer of last year, I mean, that, you know, unfortunate, it was unfortunate. He was sanctioned for that, and certainly his dad wasn't unhappy that things like that happened. Tubby was certainly disappointed. But what was interesting, the reason that Associate Athletic Director Ellis was on these trips is that, and this came right out of the office of the Athletic Director and the Athletic Department, just like the rumor, if you will, and the actual and factual information that Tubby had been fired came out of that same athletic department. These guys up here, and they're pretty foul up here, if you will, they put the word out that Tubby was in the early stages of dementia. And so that made it easier in their conversations with each other, you know, over steaks and filet mignon and shrimp and et cetera, to talk in terms of how they could discredit this African-American. And, in fact, they began to tell jokes. And one of the reasons that Tubby was having some problems as it pertains to his reflection and memories is because he was taking some very strong medication as a part of fighting the cancer. And anybody who, unfortunately, has themselves or had a loved one go through cancer treatment and et cetera, know that there are drugs that you take that can make you think that, you know, you're walking on a cloud
and maybe your reactions and response aren't as quick as they should be. But there's been no indication that Tubby Smith was suffering from the early stages of dementia and that he no longer had control of his faculties, if you will. And I thought that that was pretty foul. I mean, I know there are a lot of dirty things that they've done here over the years, and I've been here since 1945 and have been an activist since 1958. I mean, I know the lengths that they will go to destroy you. And clearly, there was something funny. In fact, on my television program tomorrow here in the city of Minneapolis, I call upon Norwood Tagg and the University of Minnesota to investigate the leaks and to publicize and to fire whoever was responsible for leaking the information that Tubby Smith had been fired when Tubby himself was sitting in his office just down the hall from the athletic director's office and had no idea that these calls that were coming in to him from CBS, NBC, ESPN, and et cetera, were in fact authentic in that these sports reporters, announcers, and et cetera, had just been told by sources inside of the University of Minnesota's athletic department that Tubby Smith was fired. Now, Norwood Tagg said something very interesting when he made a statement at a press conference when he was asked by one of the white reporters, how did Tubby take it when you came into his office and told him you're fired, okay? And Norwood Tagg made a statement that you could look in Tubby's eyes and see the hurt and the disappointment, but that's not really what they were looking for. Because of Tubby's mannerisms, and Tubby kind of gives you a look, you know, that thinkers will, they were telling the joke inside the University of Minnesota's athletic department that Tubby would probably be in one of those dementia moments, and this Negro probably wouldn't even know we just got through telling him he was fired. This is the kind of conversation, Norwood, that you and others in the athletic department had. And that's the reason that you did what you did, leak the information, had calls being made to Tubby, asking him to comment on the fact that he had just been fired while this man sits at his desk planning for the 2013-2014 season. He thinks you don't know what you're talking about. And then you as the athletic director, you don't even extend to him the courtesy of a kind of private situation. You just kind of come in his office with secretaries and et cetera. I don't think you even closed the door, as I understand it, and you told Tubby, you know, Tubby, here to bring you the bad news, buddy. We're going to have to let you go. Of course, they had to pay him $2.5 million as they let him go out the door and even a little bit more, all right? But the whole statement about, yeah, well, I looked in his eyes, you know, and I could kind of see in his eyes that he was trying to grasp it. See, there was a reason that that statement was made. And in the private dinners and gatherings they've had since then, they asked the question of Norwood and his deputies, did he even know what you were talking about? And for some of you here in the Twin Cities that participated, and some of you blacks who went around a couple days later saying in bars and et cetera, that Tubby was suffering from significant dementia, shame on you. But any questions that you may have, feel free to give us a call next week. Don Allen should be back next week. If not, we will be here once again with On Point, if you will. But we think it was important for you to know how poorly a fine gentleman, an excellent coach, and just one committed individual to his young men and players, how he was treated in this very racist atmosphere by a very racist university. We'll be back with you again next Saturday. This is Ron Edwards. This is On Point. God bless Black America, and let's hope for the best on the Korean Peninsula. Good afternoon.